Part 3. Complete Health. Chapter 12. A Healthy Heart. Managing or reversing the effects of diabetes means more than getting your blood sugar under control. It also means regaining your health as much as you possibly can and safeguarding it. Health problems are not a one-way street. If you have been in poor health or if diabetes has attacked your heart, eyes, kidneys, and nerves, revamping your diet can have a dramatic positive effect on your well-being. In this chapter and the next, we will look at how to keep your heart and the rest of you healthy. Taking risks seriously. You probably already have a good idea of your risk of heart problems. Your doctor has sized up your cholesterol level and blood pressure, and you know your family history. You may be on medications to control cholesterol or strengthen your heart. The next step is to review what you need to know about risks, and more important, what you can do to reverse the disease process. In evaluating your risk of developing heart problems, doctors look at your age, family history, smoking habits, weight, cholesterol level, blood pressure, and other factors. I believe, however, that it is prudent to act as if you are at risk even if none of these factors apply to you. Here's why. Most people in North America and Europe have already developed artery blockages, the beginnings of heart disease, by the time they reach early adulthood. Having diabetes increases that risk. Rather than wondering, am I at risk? It is safe to simply assume that you are and to take action to protect yourself. Some evidence suggests that your heart is assaulted especially hard by smoking, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels, while your small blood vessels, such as those in your eyes and kidneys, are especially sensitive to high blood glucose levels. That is probably true, although all of these risk factors matter for both types of complications. Sizing up the enemy. Let's take a minute to understand the dragons we are slaying, starting with cholesterol. Your body uses cholesterol in the same way a factory might use petroleum. Cholesterol is a raw material, and your body makes many things from it. Believe it or not, cholesterol is used to make certain hormones, including testosterone and estrogen. It is also inserted into the thin cell membranes that surround each cell in your body. And it acts as a kind of glue to hold the membranes together. Without it, you would collapse into a gelatinous heap. Just as refineries send trucks filled with petroleum to factories to be turned into everything from plastic to petroleum jelly, your liver sends particles containing cholesterol into your bloodstream for your cells to use. Imagine what would happen if a refinery flooded the roads with tankers, sending out far more supply than was needed. Day after day, more and more oil trucks would clog up the roadways. Some might have accidents, spilling cargo and creating havoc. Cholesterol presents the same problem. When too many particles of cholesterol pass through your bloodstream, they create a different kind of congestion. The circulating particles can easily become damaged. When they do, they spark the formation of raised bumps called plaques, which are very much like small scars on your artery walls. Now, this is dangerous because plaques are fragile. They can crack or rupture, and when that happens, the blood around the plaque starts to clot. The growing clot can fill the artery like a cork and stop blood flow. If that happens in an artery that carries blood to the heart, a portion of the heart muscle will die. That's a heart attack, which doctors call a myocardial infarction. The solution to the problem is to reduce the number of cholesterol particles circulating in the bloodstream. Luckily, we know how to do that. Although previous diets had only a modest ability to lower cholesterol, the diet changes described within this book are dramatically effective. Is it my genes? Rick was 45 when he came to our office looking for help. He was not terribly optimistic that a diet change could really help him. His father had had diabetes and heart disease, and his own cholesterol had been high for years. Previous diets had let him down. A few years earlier, his doctor had suggested limiting red meat and eating more fish and chicken, but the change had had no perceptible effect. "I've got a genetic problem," he said. "What I really need is a different set of parents." "It may well be that genes played a big role in his problem," I told him. "But we would not know that until we made a more serious effort to change his eating habits, one that went beyond what he had tried before. I explained to him what you are hearing in this chapter. He decided to give it a try. We'll revisit his story and progress shortly." Reversing heart disease. The most famous program using diet and lifestyle changes to tackle cholesterol and reverse heart disease was developed by Dean Ornish, MD, at the Preventive Medicine Research Institute in Sausalito, California. Dr. Ornish is a Harvard-trained physician who made medical history in 1990 by showing that a combination of diet and other lifestyle changes could actually reverse artery blockages. His findings were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Lancet, and other prestigious journals. In his landmark study, Dr. Ornish recruited heart patients from hospitals in the San Francisco area. He divided them into two groups. Participants in one group, the control group, were asked to follow their regular doctor's advice about diet and other treatments. Generally speaking, that meant a diet favoring chicken and fish rather than red meat, cutting back on fat, and using medications as needed. The other group, the experimental group, was given a very different regimen. They did not use cholesterol-lowering drugs at all. Instead, they began a very special diet. First, because cholesterol is found in animal products, meat, dairy products, and eggs, Dr. Ornish chose a vegetarian diet for the study. Remember, grains, beans, vegetables, fruits, in fact, all plant-derived foods are cholesterol-free. These foods are not just free of cholesterol, they are also free of animal fat, which is even more important. Just to clarify, cholesterol and fat are two different things. Cholesterol is a microscopic ingredient in cell membranes, as we described earlier, and is present in all animal cells. Fat is different. It is the white strip in a cut of roast beef, the yellow layer under chicken skin, and the greasy residue left on your fingers if you touch a salmon fillet. You can easily see and feel animal fat. When you eat it, your body makes cholesterol. I learned about animal fat as a child growing up in North Dakota. Some mornings, my mother cooked bacon for me and my four siblings. When it was done, she put the hot strips on paper towels to drain. Then she carefully picked up the frying pan and poured the hot grease into a jar to save it. Now, she did not store the jar of bacon grease in the refrigerator. She simply put it in the cupboard. She knew that as it cooled, it would turn into a waxy solid. The next day, she spooned some of the bacon grease into a pan and fried eggs in it. With that sort of diet, it is perhaps remarkable that any of her children lived to adulthood, but that is the way we ate until we learned better. The fact that bacon grease is solid at room temperature is a sign that it is loaded with saturated fat, which you can think of as bad fat because it raises your cholesterol level. If you are wondering where the term saturated fat came from, it's actually very logical. If you could look at a fat molecule under a powerful microscope, it would look like a long chain of carbon atoms with perhaps 18 or 20 atoms joined in a line. Attached to the carbon chain are hydrogen atoms. If the chain is completely covered, saturated, with hydrogen atoms, the fat becomes a waxy solid and is called a saturated fat. If, however, hydrogen atoms are absent at several spots on the fat chain, the fat is called polyunsaturated. Polyunsaturated oils are liquids. And if just one spot on the carbon chain has no hydrogen atoms attached, the fat is called monounsaturated. Olive and canola oils are rich in this sort of fat. They are unusual in that they are liquid at room temperature but solid in the refrigerator. Saturated fat is the kind that pushes your cholesterol upward. All fats are mixtures. Beef fat, for example, is about half saturated fat, with the rest being a mixture of various unsaturated fats. Chicken fat is about 30% saturated fat. Fish vary from 15 to 30% saturated fat. Vegetable oils are much lower in saturated fat, except for the tropical oils. Coconut, palm, and palm kernel oil are all high in saturated fat. Some food companies alter vegetable oils through a process called hydrogenation, which makes them similar to saturated fats. The resulting fats, called trans fats or partially hydrogenated fats, are solid and have a long shelf life. Unfortunately, their effect on your cholesterol level is similar to that of butter or lard. They are commonly used in restaurant fryers and in snack foods. When you see the words partially hydrogenated vegetable oil on a food label, move along to a healthier choice. You can see why Dr. Ornish decided to use a vegetarian diet in a program of healthy lifestyle changes. Plant foods have no cholesterol and no animal fat. He also kept vegetable oils to a minimum. The results were remarkable. Among the vegetarians, chest pain rapidly melted away. The average person's LDL, bad cholesterol, fell by a full 40%. After a year, each participant had an angiogram, a special X-ray that shows blockages in the arteries of the heart, and Dr. Ornish compared the results with those of the same kind of test done at the beginning of the study. The results were amazing. The blockages in the coronary arteries, the arteries that nourish the heart muscle itself, were actually starting to shrink. The arteries were opening again. The effect was so pronounced that the difference could be clearly seen on the angiograms of 82% of patients after the first year, all with no heart bypasses, no angioplasties, and not even cholesterol-lowering drugs. Wake up and smell the cholesterol. By now, you are probably yawning, saying you already know that cholesterol and saturated fat are bad and that you're supposed to cut down on them. Been there, done that, you say. Well, that is exactly the problem. For years, health authorities have suggested that people cut down on foods containing cholesterol and animal fat. Many people have chosen leaner cuts of beef and favored chicken and fish, but they have gotten very little in the way of results. Most people find that despite these diet changes, their cholesterol levels barely budge at all. I imagine most have decided that diet changes are a waste of time. After a month or two on their low-fat diet, they find themselves ready to give up. It turns out that a switch from red meat to white meat is not good enough, and here's why. All meats, even lean meats, contain cholesterol, ranging from about 10 milligrams in every ounce of tuna to about 50 milligrams per ounce of shrimp. Chicken and beef are in between with about 25 milligrams per ounce. Red meat, poultry, and fish, even the leaner cuts, also contain a significant amount of fat. In contrast, of course, there is no cholesterol or animal fat in any food from plants. That goes for every fruit and vegetable, every bean, every grain, every variety of rice, pasta, and potato, and everything made from them. Thus, if you were to try to lower your cholesterol by simply switching from beef to chicken and fish, you would have one arm tied behind your back. As shown in clinical tests, the cholesterol-lowering effect of a switch from red meat to white meat is minimal, only about 5%. Most people who follow such diets have no measurable improvement within their arteries. Either, on average, their artery blockages continue to get worse as time goes by. Why didn't anyone tell me? When Dr. Ornish's findings were published, most medical authorities were willing to believe his program was a very healthful regimen. But many felt the program was so austere that few people could actually follow it. I have studied this issue in some detail, however, and have come to a completely different conclusion. The diet is not terribly austere. In fact, it stacks up well against any other diet a doctor might prescribe. Let me describe my own experience. When I was growing up in cattle country, my family ate pretty much the same things every day. Roast beef, baked potatoes, and corn. Except for special occasions when we ate roast beef, baked potatoes, and peas. In medical school, I decided to change my diet. At first, I tried pasta, making a sauce from fresh tomatoes, basil, and spices. Then I discovered that just below the beef, poultry, and fish choices, Chinese restaurant menus feature many delicious vegetable dishes, as do Mexican restaurants. Japanese restaurants serve delicious miso soup, salads, and vegetable sushi. Middle Eastern cuisine is simple but delicious, with hummus, falafel, couscous, and other delights. Thai, Indian, Ethiopian. All these cuisines offer endless vegetarian choices. Compared to those elegant meals, my North Dakota roast beef, baked potato, and corn no longer seemed like the pinnacle of the culinary art. To me, a plant-based diet was a world of new tastes and was anything but austere. When I first learned about the work of Dr. Ornish in the late 1980s, I was working at the psychiatry clinic at George Washington University. I telephoned him and suggested that we study the acceptability of his diet. I flew to San Francisco and interviewed each of the participants in his heart study. I asked how well they liked the foods they ate, how much effort was required to prepare them, what their family members thought, and what they planned to do in the future. I found that the vegetarian group did grumble a bit at first. They had to learn about some new foods and master some new cooking tricks. On average, it took about 4 weeks before the diet really became second nature to them, but they adapted well, partly because they saw such dramatic results. Their cholesterol levels plummeted, their chest pain disappeared, and their heart disease reversed. The average participant lost, believe it or not, 22 pounds during the first year. They came to love the foods they ate. I vividly remember one participant's reaction. He was angry. Angry that previous doctors were eager to prescribe potentially dangerous drugs and even operate on him, charging him enormous amounts of money, and did not bother to even mention the power of diet changes. Overall, the participants not only found their diets acceptable, they felt it would be wrong for doctors not to give patients this kind of choice. Now, it did not surprise me that the vegetarian diet took a little getting used to, or that the patients soon came to love it. What surprised me was the reaction of the control group, the group that was not asked to adopt the vegetarian diet. They grumbled too. Some said their diet was nothing but chicken and fish, chicken and fish, chicken and fish, night after night. All the pleasures of life were gone, some seemed to say, and they had nothing to show for it. Many were still dealing with chest pain, trying to control their cholesterol levels with medication and fighting a losing battle. Having repeatedly studied how people react to different diets, I am convinced that a vegetarian diet is actually easier to follow than most other diets. This is partly because of its simplicity, like quitting smoking or freeing yourself from any other habit. Setting aside unhealthy foods is easier than teasing yourself with small amounts of them day after day. And the diet's benefits are usually so rewarding that you want to stick with it. A few years later, I reviewed every published research study in which heart patients were asked to change their diet, with researchers tracking their success or failure. At the time, the prevailing wisdom was that doctors should not push their patients too hard to make diet changes because the patients were likely to just throw up their hands and give up. But I found just the opposite. In controlled studies, when researchers asked patients to make small diet changes, they in fact achieved only small changes. When researchers encouraged their study participants to make bigger diet changes, most participants actually did make them, and they got better results. You can do it too. Your heart deserves the very best.